Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. We've had a breaking news item as we speak. It is involving a man we regard very highly, who is truly in the front lines of the war for the free world. His name is Lars Hedegaard, a Danish patriot and freedom fighter who was nearly murdered today by what appears to have been a jihadist who opposes his clarity and his integrity and his courage in opposing this kind of Sharia blasphemy and Sharia jihadist impulse. We have with us one of Lars Hedegaard's colleagues and a dear friend of this program and of mine, Diana West. Normally we talk with her on Wednesdays, but we've asked her to jump into the breach with us and tell us what we know about Lars's near-miss experience today and what's behind it as best you can tell. Diana, welcome. It's good to have you with us.
Yes, thank you, Frank. What we know is that sometime today, in the afternoon in Copenhagen, an assassin knocked on Lars Hedegaard's door at his apartment in a residential neighborhood adjoining Copenhagen and pretended to be delivering a package. And while Lars was apparently maneuvering with the package, pulled out a gun and shot him at very close range and missed. We don't know exactly what transpired in what kind of struggle. I've heard some accounts that Lars threw a package. I've heard that there were the gun jammed and so on, but the assassin left. He was described by someone close to Lars later on as having been described as Arab-looking, and indeed the description in the newspapers is now talking about a dark-skinned person with thick, dark hair. And two men were seen jumping the fence into the nearby Copenhagen Zoo. And the zoo has been evacuated, the neighborhood was evacuated, and Danish radio recently was reporting that police would be detonating something, which seems to mean that they found some kind of a bomb or some sort of explosive device that they were, or device they were not sure of, but things are at this point still breaking and not exactly clear, but certainly this happened. Lars is a very well-known historian and journalist, veteran journalist, renowned in Denmark. Lars is 70 years old and has a long storied career behind him as being a fearless journalist. He is someone who speaks truth to power regularly, and he has, of course, in recent years, been very outspoken on the Islamization of Europe and Denmark and writes fearlessly on these topics.
Yeah. He has, of course, been prosecuted for doing that.
Yes.
Under Danish law or European hate speech laws. Tell us about his travails in that regard, and has he been allowed, despite clearly what is the exercise of free speech, to be subjected to what amounts to really Sharia blasphemy laws?
Yes, yes. Lars was brought into court under Sharia blasphemy laws in disguise with the laws against hate speech for actually what was a private conversation in his case that ended up being recorded and disseminated online. And there was nothing in it that was indefensible or counterfactual, as Lars was able to demonstrate in court. However, his case, he was initially judged guilty and judged assigned a fine and so on. He was able to appeal and take the case right up to the Danish Supreme Court, which last year acquitted him in a unanimous decision. So under Danish law, he remained free to speak his mind, and indeed he has done so and become recently the editor of a new, very aggressive newspaper known as Dispatch International. It's a weekly newspaper that is covering Europe and the wider world in a very forthright manner, which is something we can't say about the rest of the media in Europe or America, for that matter. And of course, you know, they are covering corruption, government malfeasance, and so on, and also the stories of Europe's time, which is the Islamization of Europe via immigration and via the Sharia creep into the law. So he is a very public target for these absolute barbarians who do not wish free speech to exist in Denmark. And of course, this whole case is like a nightmarish replay of what we've seen in recent years regarding the Danish cartoonist Kurt Westergaard, who of course has had numerous assassination attempts in recent years since he did the turban bomb head Mohammed cartoon that became so famous.
Right. Diana West is our guest. She is a close friend of Lars Hedegaard and a woman who actually has been working with him on Dispatches International as their American correspondent, as I recall. Diana, this is so gripping because it really is the proverbial canary in the mineshaft. I wonder if you can help connect a dot for us. We have been raising increasing alarms about the apparent effort by the Organization of Islamic Cooperation to kind of ratchet things up, having tried for years now to promote this idea of the West having to submit to Sharia blasphemy laws through various UN-mandated resolutions and the like. They seem now to have decided to dispense with this Islamophobia in favor of simply calling people who engage in what they describe with that term as people who are haters of Islam. And I just wonder, as a close student, both you know, through your columns and through your wonderful books about the culture of the United States, including Death of the Grown-Up and a forthcoming American Betrayal, Diana West, if you see this attack on Lars Hedegaard perhaps as an indication of the effect of this ratcheting up in the name of defensive jihad, as the Islamists call it.
Absolutely. The connection is clear. The movement of Sharia blasphemy law goes hand in glove with jihad violence. And this is a moment in which Lars Hedegaard becomes an infamous example in the eyes of the Islamic world, who is going to be punished or attempted to be punished by taking his life. This becomes instruction to the rest of us. And the unfortunate reaction that we've seen time and time again is that well-meaning Americans or Europeans then move to censor themselves in order to make the violence go away. And they cloak this with all kinds of language about being sensitive, about being inclusive, about being peace-abiding and lawful and so on. But all this is the reaction of fear to naked violence. And it leaves it to the politicians with words, or the cartoonists with pictures, or the journalists with newspapers to go out there and actually fight this fight. And what should happen is this should actually be a call to arms to all of us to reject the violence and to reject the savaging of our liberty. And that's what the natural and healthy reaction would be. And I fear that what this usually does is actually make us retreat. And so at a certain point, people need to wake up and understand that retreating only invites more repression and more Sharia. And that is where we are at this point. So it's
Diana,
a big decision for your listeners.
I couldn't agree more. We have just a minute left. Connect the dot, if you would, very quickly to the fate of the video maker blamed by Hillary Clinton and the president for inspiring the attack on our Libyan embassy.
Absolutely. That the video maker of Innocence of Muslims is the only person who is now in jail for the attack on our compound in Benghazi. That sends a very strong message to the Islamic world that we will do everything to censor our speech of criticism of the expansionist Islamic period we're in, and thereby come under increasing rule by it. And this is a very dangerous period because the tectonic plates are shifting, and they are closing in over our head, not to mix metaphors, but that's what's happening. And looking at Copenhagen, of all places, to have such violence and such assaults on liberty is shows us how far we have fallen.
Indeed. Diana West, we have to let it go at that. We are grateful, as I know you are, that Lars Hedegaard's life was spared today, not by any desire of his assailant, obviously, but by God. And we're appreciative of your analysis as to what's really behind this attack and why it is an attack on all of us in the free world. We'll continue the fight with you and look forward to talking with you again very soon. Diana West, thanks for joining us. Next up, we'll be speaking with the fabulous Monica Crowley about Hegel Agonistes, among other things. Straight ahead.
To know what you think, leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
Do you see that doggy in the shelter?
Hi, I'm Buddy, the adorable puppy you adopted from the Humane Society.
Meow. I'm Whiskers, a fluffy kitty, just waiting for someone to love me.
When you adopt a pet, we hope your new furry friend will become a cherished member of your family. And as Buddy and Whiskers will tell you, the key to success is following the rules to love by.
Woof, that's right. Please give me food, water, and exercise every day. To stay healthy, I need the same kind of things you need.
Talk to me. I like hearing your voice.
You're my best friend. Please don't stay mad at me or lock me up as punishment. Remember, I'm probably going to live 10 to 15 years, so take care of me when I get old.
One day you'll need someone to take care of you, too.
A message from the Montgomery County Humane Society. Visit www.mchumane.org for the complete rules to love by.
Be your best friend for life.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit shariathethreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, the Threat to America at amazon.com.
Congress doesn't have a budget for 2011, but the GOP has proposed a budget for 2012, and Bill Bennett likes it.
Maybe it helps to have that 2012 in the background, people hearing and seeing Ryan and the Republicans saying we're serious about really cutting the budget
as a backdrop
to this debate about 2011. People make the decision, well, Republicans seem much more serious about this.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC, New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Well, this is a treat. We have back with us one of the really luminous figures in the American media, and for that matter, in the mondo politico, as they call it, the political world. She is Monica Crowley. She is the author, among other things, of What the Bleep Just Happened, and the host of Marvelous Talk Radio Show, The Monica Crowley Show, the most brilliant contributor to the McLaughlin Group, and so much more. She is with us to talk, among other things, about what she calls Hegel Agonistes. Now, that is a literary reference that may be over most of our heads, Monica, so read us in on that after I say a proper welcome. Great to have you with us.
Well, Frank, it's always nice to talk to you, my dear old friend, not so old.
Friend of many years, friend of many years, as we say. Tell
that
me, what's
was
this?
A fantastic introduction. In fact, I think I need to take you with me everywhere
I'm
go.
I'm happy to serve.
After that one, thank you. The reference to Agonistes, it actually comes from Samson. Samson Agonistes, that's the original literary reference. It was also applied to Richard Nixon by...
Your old boss.
I'm drawing a blank. His last name was Will. Not
yes.
George Will, but
no,
the other
Gary
one.
Wills, I think.
Yes, thank you. And it describes somebody who's in sort of a constant struggle, an inner struggle, an outward struggle, and it's torturous to watch. And I decided to use that literary reference to describe former Senator Chuck Hagel after watching his testimony and his confirmation hearing to be defense secretary last week. This was a disastrous performance, befitting a disastrous candidate for one of our nation's top national security posts. I was not expecting much, given the fact that Hagel has never been known to be a defense intellectual or somebody who has thoroughly thought through national security doctrines or may even have a doctrine of his own. No, he has none of those things. So my expectations, Frank, were already low. But when he appeared before the Senate, this is a man who completely fell apart in the glare. I think he had been protected through so much of his Senate career by those who sort of held him up as the responsible moderate Republican we can all get with and so on. But this is a very prickly man who really has no basis for thinking in terms of national security issues and defense issues. He has also been on the record, as you have pointed out many times, using the incredibly offensive phrase, the Jewish lobby, saying that members of Congress had been intimidated by what he called the Jewish lobby. He's taken repeated positions against our ally Israel. He has opposed sanctions on Iran, which is a no-brainer for anybody in any party, and yet he has opposed sanctions on Iran. He voted for the war in Iraq, and then he refused to support the surge, even after it proved successful. And John McCain went at him last week and said, yes or no, was that a mistake to oppose the surge? And Hagel either couldn't answer it or he wouldn't answer it. Now, the thing about this, Frank, and I know that you have been at the forefront on this issue, the only reason, or maybe I should say it this way, the primary reason that Barack Obama chose Chuck Hagel for the defense secretary spot is because Obama wants to go forward with these deep and crippling cuts in our national defense budget, which is, again, the primary reason why Obama chose him. Hagel has been on the record supporting those crippling cuts. He will carry them out no matter what, and that is why he is there. So it doesn't matter if he's on the record agreeing with the statement that the U.S. is the, quote, world's bully. Doesn't matter that he has smeared Jews with the Jewish lobby. Doesn't matter that he's opposed to Israel. None of that matters because Obama wants to go in and slash the defense budget, something that his outgoing defense secretary, Leon Panetta, has said would cripple the United States and prevent us from defending ourselves as well as our allies. So this is a man who is in no way fit for this job. He struggled through his hearing. And Frank, I have to tell you, when I have watched the last 4 years of this presidency, I have wondered where the patriots are. And this country is full of them in terms of the defense establishment, the intelligence establishment. But when we look at nominees like Chuck Hagel or John Brennan for the CIA, or when we have watched this president throw the intelligence community under the bus on Benghazi, on so many other things, where are the patriots to stand up and say, no, that is incorrect? What we have been doing is something completely opposite from what the president has been saying. I know it's tough to go up against the president, the commander-in-chief, but where are the truth tellers? Where are people in the Senate on the Democrat side? We're the honest Democrats to stand up and say, Mr. President, I'm sorry, I know he's your choice, but he is not for this job. The way conservatives did for Harriet Myers when George W. Bush went to nominate her for the Supreme Court. If you are not qualified, you are not qualified. Where is the honesty? Where is the patriotism? I'm not seeing much of it, Frank.
Yeah, no, sadly, we're not. You bring a lot of this to bear, fortunately, for all of us, Monica Crowley, and I am more grateful than I can say for you doing so. I just wanted to drill down on something because of your background with Richard Nixon, a man who had a very profound effect on nuclear strategy and arms control and the like. And you, as one of his biographers and a former assistant, certainly spent a lot of time as a PhD student at Columbia and so on, looking at nuclear security related issues. What did you make specifically, Monica Crowley, of Chuck Hagel's previous endorsement of this Global Zero Initiative plan, and then, well, his lying about it, his dissembling, his failing to acknowledge what it was about, even in the course of his testimony? Should that be a further disqualification, both on the merits of his positions and on his conduct?
You know, Frank, when I was watching this hearing, I was surprised. As far as I know now, please correct me if I'm wrong, because I didn't see the entire hearing. But as far as I could tell, there was only one question about this zero global zero initiative, about trying to get...
No, actually, there were a number offered over the course of the two rounds, I think.
But it
was pretty well established that he was prevaricating, I think, is the genteel term for it, but lying.
Well, I'm glad he was asked more than one question. I only saw one, but this is something that needs amplification. And I'm glad that you are staying on this. This is a far left radical position that's been around, kicking around the far left for many decades. And it burst out onto the scene that you remember in the 1980s, of course, you were on the forefront of this during the Reagan years. And they come up with these little catchy slogans like you can't hug your children with nuclear arms and all of this
the
insanity.
The nuclear freeze, right?
Exactly. The nuclear freeze movement and all of this. Fortunately, it hasn't gained much traction here in the United States, unless it's been sort of this fringe thing, until now. Because you now have a president, a commander-in-chief, who is on the record as embracing this kind of position. He has said in the past, this is Barack Obama, Frank, that he would like to zero out America's nuclear arsenal. Chuck Hagel, who I hope his nomination goes down in flames, but if in fact he is confirmed, he will then have a defense secretary who's in the position to try to help him get there.
You know the cruelties of time better than anybody because you do this for a living. But very quickly, let me just turn to a related point. We have Joe Biden spending the weekend in Munich talking with the Iranians, or at least to the Iranians, about the desire of the United States to get in direct negotiations with them, which assuredly will get them the bomb, and with the Russians, which is presumably meant to be the sort of opening gambit for the new, more flexible Obama administration 2.0 effort to rid the world of nuclear weapons, starting with ours. Your quick appreciation of those two Biden gambits.
Yes, and it's all tied together. You have an administration, as I said, whose ultimate goal and objective point is to try to get the United States out to zero nuclear weapons. So now you actually have a whole team in place, and should Hagel be confirmed, he will be on the forefront of this, of trying to do that. On the other side, you have this administration elevating our enemies, many of whom are already nuclear armed, and in the case of Iran, working 24/7 to get there. So now we have this complete upside-down Alice in Wonderland world where the United States and the West are moving to reduce their, if not zero out, their nuclear arsenals while we're in the position of advancing our enemies and supporting their nuclear weapons programs, if not their own nuclear arsenals. I have a good friend who does a lot of business in Russia, Frank, and he told me 2 weeks ago that Putin knows he can go to town. That's what was meant by the flexibility comment, and Putin now knows that he can get away with anything, including supporting his allies like Iran in their nuclear weapons program.
And is in the business of doing just that. Monica Crowley, so much more to talk about. I hope you'll come back soon, and in fact, often during 2013. We appreciate tremendously all of your efforts through so many different outlets to inform and to challenge the rest of us to think about what the bleep just happened and what we better do about it. Thank you for joining us as always. God bless you. Keep up the good work. Next up, we go to Robert Spencer. We'll talk with him about Hillary discovering lately that there is a grand and global jihad. What a concept. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
It is with sound mind and body that I, James Fredericks III, after fighting with all direct family members for decades, leave my entire fortune of $32 million to the one friend I had in the end, the package delivery guy, Matt Sanger.
Woohoo! Yeah! I had a feeling about this. I'm rich! Oh, this cannot be happening.
Actually, it's not happening.
What?
And it never will.
I don't get it.
There aren't even people here. That's just one of those murmuring sound effects.
Seriously?
Listen, if you want to have money in your future, don't rely on luck.
Huh.
Put $10 away each month. Cook once in a while instead of eating out.
Okay.
Pay down your high-interest credit cards.
Right.
Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow.
So, no inheritance?
No. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
And just to be clear, no inheritance, right?
This is Frank Abney with the Secure Freedom Minute. 11 U.S. senators threatened to block John Brennan's appointment as CIA director to extract a legal justification for the Obama administration's use of drone attacks in foreign countries to kill senior leaders of al-Qaeda and associated groups who happen to be Americans. A Justice Department memo released yesterday helps allay legitimate concerns about the potential abuse of such a practice. These include reasonable requirements that the targeted individual poses an imminent threat of violent attack and that capturing him is, quote, feasible, unquote. In the real world, we must be able quickly to neutralize such threats, even if traitorous Americans are responsible for them. There are many reasons for the Senate to keep John Brennan from politicizing and otherwise undermining the Central Intelligence Agency. This policy should not be one of them. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedomradio.com.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement? And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted, and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit, make a plan, be informed today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined by one of the country's leading authorities on the true nature of and the distinct threat posed by Islamism. He is Robert Spencer, the author of more books than you can shake a stick at, including most recently, Did Muhammad Exist? An Inquiry into Islam's Obscure Origins. He's the director of a terrific program at the David Horowitz Freedom Center. It's called Jihad Watch. He writes a marvelous blog by that name and contributes through his books and his writings and through his speeches immeasurably to, I think, all of our understanding of the threat we're confronting. And it's a great pleasure to have you back with us. Dr. Spencer, welcome.
Happy to be here, Frank. Thank you.
Let's jump right into it. I spoke a moment ago with Diana West, Robert, about this attack on Lars Hedegaard. We, I think, agreed that this is not just a one-off affair. This is not even just something isolated to Denmark, which is increasingly under assault from these Islamists, but really an example of the canary in the mineshaft. Would you agree?
Oh, definitely. I think it's the next level of the assault on the freedom of speech and the attempt to shut down by force any criticism of jihad and Islamic supremacism. They tried to silence Lars in 2011 by putting him on trial for so-called hate speech, for speaking truthfully about Islam and jihad, and that failed. He kept speaking, and so now we see what the next step is.
Indeed, self-censorship, as Diana said, is very much the response we're seeing a lot of, and I'm grateful that you are not one of those who allows yourself to be subjected to it. Let me ask you about the epiphany that Hillary Clinton had on her way out the door as Secretary of State. Robert Spencer, you've written about her remarkable discovery after 4 years of systematically ignoring it, it seems, that there is, in fact, a global jihadist threat. What's up with that?
It reminded me of Abraham Lincoln saying that nobody has a good enough memory to be a successful liar. And I think that Hillary just forgot, in the pressure of the moment, that jihad was forbidden to be spoken by an Obama administration official, and that the official policy of the administration is that jihad is a good thing, a benign thing, and has nothing to do with Islamic jihad terrorism. This is absurd, it's false, and they know that it's absurd and false, and Hillary just forgot.
The prime mover behind that meme, of course, is the man that President Obama thinks would be the best to direct the CIA, John Brennan. If they know that it's not true, Robert Spencer, that jihad is not simply about personal struggle, but it's actually about holy war, what is it that John Brennan is doing, and should it disqualify him from the post of CIA director?
Well, you know, the consistent policy of the Obama administration has been to enable and abet pro-Sharia regimes all across the Middle East in the so-called Arab Spring and now in Syria, and they have been consistently on the wrong side of these issues. I mean, it's noteworthy that there are two sets of demonstrators that Obama could not see fit to support in the Muslim world over the last few years, and they were the demonstrators in Iran and the demonstrators now in Egypt. And both of those have one thing in common, and that is that they were fighting against Sharia regime, whereas all the other demonstrators were fighting in order to enable the imposition of Sharia regimes. And so it shouldn't surprise us that Obama administration spokesmen like Brennan are whitewashing and denying the connection of jihad terrorism to Sharia and to Islam in general. So the question really becomes, does this president think that Sharia is a good thing and that we should have it? And what exactly does he envision for the world? And these are questions that if we had a responsible mainstream media, they would be asking him and confronting him about it every opportunity.
They seem to be at best engaging in the kind of self-censorship you warned of a moment ago, Robert Spencer, and at worst, they are complicit in the effort to bring this utterly anti-constitutional doctrine to the United States. Robert Spencer is our guest. As I mentioned earlier, he is the director of Jihad Watch, an absolutely indispensable service to our country, brought to us by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. You are a columnist as well of great renown, Robert Spencer, and one of the things that you have touched on, I believe, is Chuck Hagel and his affinity for these Islamists. It seems that there really hasn't been a Sharia prime moving operation that he hasn't thought we ought to engage. Should that disqualify him from the role of Secretary of Defense?
Absolutely, it should. His clear contempt for and opposition to our foremost and most reliable ally in the Middle East, Israel, should disqualify him. His refusal to condemn Hezbollah and his refusal to sign on with the designation of the Islamic Republic of Iran's Revolutionary Guard as terrorist groups, these things ought to be complete disqualifiers. But now the whole Democratic Party is signed on to this agenda because the Obama administration appointments have been consistent. Hagel's not the first to be anti-Israel and not the first to be somebody who has a soft stance on terrorism. I mean, we were just talking about Brennan, and he's another one.
Let me ask you this, Robert Spencer. Your colleague in marvelous effort you call Stop the Islamization of America, Pamela Geller, is, as we speak, scheduled to participate in a press conference in Washington with Cliff Kincaid, who has been leading for Accuracy in Media an effort to oppose what I call the Al Gorezira operation, the Al Gore-enabled penetration of our home, some 40 million of them, by Al Jazeera. Robert, tell us what you make of Al Jazeera, and set aside for a moment Al Jazeera English or Al Jazeera America. What is Al Jazeera, the mothership, about, and who makes it possible for it to operate to that end?
Al Jazeera is funded by the government of Qatar, and it is the foremost propaganda arm of the global jihad. Of course, they were famous a few years back for being the first host of these videos that Osama bin Laden and Zawahiri would deliver to the world, and they never seemed to be able or interested or willing to engage in any efforts to trace the couriers of those videos back to their sources and help law enforcement authorities to actually find and arrest Osama bin Laden and Zawahiri.
On that point, Cliff Kincaid has pointed out to me that one of the interesting aspects of this new, very popular film, Zero Dark Thirty, is a reference. Most of us probably wouldn't catch it unless it was pointed out to the fact that as the CIA was trying to find the courier to Osama bin Laden, the proximity to an Al Jazeera office was noteworthy in their calculation. So I think this makes your point very well.
Oh, absolutely. And they've had reporters arrested for complicity in terror activities. And I think most noteworthy and most illustrative of their editorial perspective is the fact that their featured key personality is Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi, who, because of his exposure on Al Jazeera, is the most renowned and popular Islamic imam in the entire world. And Qaradawi has praised Hitler, has said that Muslims should finish his work. He's fiendishly and viciously anti-Semitic. He's barred from the U.S. for calling for jihad martyrdom suicide attacks against U.S. troops in Iraq. He has a terrible record of endorsement of jihad activity, of the worst elements of Sharia, the ones that are completely at variance with human rights. And let's remember, this is the guy who is a star on the network that Al Gore's partner said we wanted to sell to somebody who was ideologically eye-to-eye with us. And they would refuse Glenn Beck, and they go with these jihadis. It's very illustrative of the leftist Islamic alliance.
It is indeed. And then let's turn, Robert Spencer, quickly to what you would expect the American version of Al Jazeera. There's, of course, been for some time now an Al Jazeera English, but they're planning on a new brand in the United States. Yusuf al-Qaradawi presumably will not be featured on that. But is it fair to say, in your best professional judgment, Dr. Robert Spencer, that this is an instrument of enemy political warfare, and it will be used, even if it's under a somewhat more polished and less directly offensive veneer, for that purpose in the United States, if those 40 million homes are in fact penetrated by it, thanks to Al Gore's handiwork?
I think that it'll be very like current TV, because there's a tremendous convergence between the left's foreign policy and the Islamic Jihad's foreign policy. They want to see a weak America. They want to see Sharia spreading around the world. So this is exactly the kind of thing that current TV has been all about, and expect that it will be more of the same, although probably from Al Jazeera, it will be actually more sophisticated and insidious and also better distributed.
A frightening prospect, and one that I hope, as you and Pamela Geller and others, Cliff Kincaid not least, join forces to oppose this and expose it, that we'll be able, if only in states where there are those regulating these sorts of cable operations who are sensitive to having enemy propaganda instruments injected at the expense of the consumer, by the way, to be able to beat this back. Because I couldn't agree with you more, Robert Spencer. This is a menace. It is a scandal that Al Gore has enabled it. And it is something that I think we need to be both indignant about and doing everything we can to oppose. Robert Spencer, we appreciate your time and your expertise tremendously. I hope we will have a chance to visit with you often in 2013. Next up, we've got Andy McCarthy. We'll get his take on the administration's policy on killing Americans through drones if they're turncoats to this country. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This hurricane season, coastal residents in the Southeast and the Gulf states are urged to prepare for the uncertain conditions they may encounter in the aftermath of a major storm and make their annual contingency plans. In addition to other emergency essentials, the American Red Cross and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security recommend residents keep a diversified emergency wallet that includes cash and traveler's checks. American Express traveler's checks provide an extra measure of financial safety and security. Keeping traveler's checks and a supply of cash in small bills offers storm victims payment options to make necessary purchases. Traveler's checks never expire, providing a secure payment method whenever emergencies occur, this year and in the future. Unlike cash, they're refundable if lost or stolen. American Express Traveler's Checks are available at banks, credit unions, and American Express Travel Service locations across the Gulf Coast and Southeast regions. For more information, please visit www.americanexpress.com/travelerschecks.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of 3 children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a 5th grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a 5-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Is Nancy Pelosi looking to a higher power to get a balanced budget? Hugh Hewitt sets her straight.
When I hear you speak about this issue, of course, it's the Gospel of Matthew. When I was hungry, you gave me to eat and listen to
the Gospel. I just got to stop here. Nancy Pelosi quoting the Gospel of Matthew, as though that's got anything to do with the government. Let me just tell you, it doesn't.
Can I get an amen?
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. Andy McCarthy joins us, as he does graciously each week, graciously and brilliantly, I might add. Speaking of brilliant, he has just published an extraordinarily important post at PJ Media, a column he writes there called Ordered Liberty, and it is a superb dissection of the problem that we were talking about several times earlier in the program with our other guests, John Brennan, and the idea that this is the best man America could have as the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, if not the premier intelligence agency of the United States government, certainly one of them. And Andy, give us just, if you would, a quick rendering of your analysis as to why Brennan should be defeated, not approved for this post.
Well, Frank, thanks for the kind words. I think the upshot of my piece is that Brennan and the CIA is an epic mismatch of man and mission, because the elementary purpose of intelligence is to enable our nation to see the world as it is in all of its uncomfortable ugliness, and therefore protect ourselves from the things that threaten us. And what Brennan's career has been about, and certainly what his tenure at the Obama administration has been about, is putting blinders on, blurring reality, and trying to pretend that the things that threaten us are nothing to be worried about. So there, as I say in the piece, there may be a place for that in government. I can think of a few places where that seems to be their stock and trade. You know, places like the State Department and the White House press office. But it's really not what we want in the intelligence community, where we really rely on those guys to tell us and show us the world as it is.
To the extent that you conclude the fit is so bad, you actually suggest in this piece, Andy McCarthy, that we would be better off having no CIA than a CIA misled by an individual with John Brennan's proclivities and serious shortcomings. Is that hyperbole, or do you really think it's that bad?
I actually thought long and hard before saying that, and here's why I don't think it's hyperbole, Frank. You may remember, of course you'll remember, a few years back, I think it was probably on late 2007, maybe I'm a little screwed up on the date, but the CIA came out with a national intelligence estimate about Iran that I think was politicized and knowingly false. About the threat, and here we are
to the effect that they had suspended their pursuit of the nuclear weapon program, and that effectively there was no need to be worrying about it at that point.
Right, and what I've always said that having been dabbled a little bit in both, certainly more than dabbling in law enforcement, national security is importantly different from law enforcement in that. In law enforcement, all doubt has to be construed in favor of the suspect. And in national security, all doubt has to be construed in favor of the country. So that, for example, if you have a threat to the United States that you are aware of, you conduct yourself like it's a live threat until you're absolutely positive that it's not. And what we did with Iran was exactly the opposite. You know, we had some sort of feel-good misinformation that we decided to rely on rather than the mounds of information that we had about their sustained pursuit of nuclear weapons. And because we stood down at a critical moment, here we are 4 years down the road, 5 years down the road, in a much more dangerous situation. And that is just the one instance with respect to Iraq. What I said and what I meant in the article to which you refer is that if Brennan is running the CIA, that's going to be sort of the regular procedure, in my view. And if that's what the regular procedure is, if the point of the CIA is now going to become to politicize intelligence and convince the country that black is white, we'd be much better off without it. And, you know, frankly, given the CIA's performance over the years, where they basically have to wake up and read in the New York Times the next day that the Berlin Wall has fallen down, I'm not so sure sometimes that, that the CIA has sort of outworn its effectiveness. Now, I say that as a believer that the country has to have good intelligence to protect ourselves. But if the agency is going to be politicized, we're better off without it.
Andy McCarthy, so we're at a point where this nomination is going to be before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence on Thursday. I'm hearing that there is a lot of opposition to him, including, interestingly, from the left, and we'll come to that in a moment. But is it your counsel that committee should reject this nomination and do so, among other reasons, for the ones that you've identified in this piece as really disqualifying?
Yeah, I think that the Republicans should be using their numbers to filibuster all of Obama's terrible nominations, and I don't mean that just in the national security thicket. We're letting judges get confirmed. There's all kinds of people starting to fill high-level positions in government. There are positions in government that shouldn't exist. The Republicans should be using all of their numbers to do that because, let's face it, we're not in a time of regular politics. When Republicans were in charge, Democrats used their numbers to prevent seats from getting filled, and we didn't hear anything about the importance of government continuing to function, et cetera. It was hardball politics. They had the numbers; they could block people, and they blocked them. I don't like that kind of politics, but I also don't believe in unilateral disarmament either.
Which is what these nominees certainly are all about, it seems. Andy, let me quickly turn to one other question. We've had released just in the past few hours a memorandum from the Justice Department that professes to explain the legal justification for the drone attacks against American citizens overseas who have been associated with Al-Qaeda. Evidently, the lever for getting that released was the Brennan nomination, maybe the Hagel nomination as well, and the threat by some senators to block them if they didn't get this information. Have you had a chance to look at this memorandum? And at the very least, what do you make of the argument that the president needs to be able to strike American traitors when they are involved in, described at least, as imminent threats to this country?
Well, I know about it, Frank. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I'm intimately familiar with the issues because I've been arguing them for a long time. The Supreme Court has resolved in the post-World War II cases, Eisentrager in particular, the constitutional protections of Americans who collude with the enemy. And, you know, the bottom line is that if you take up arms against the United States or join an enemy against the United States, you may be treated as the enemy. And we have just as much authority to use lethal force against you as we do against, the enemy forces. Now, all power can be abused, and I don't mean to suggest that this is not something to be very concerned about and scrutinized carefully. But as a legal proposition, if you're an Islamic terrorist who happens to be an American citizen, and you're in Yemen plotting against the United States with Al-Qaeda, and we have a chance to take you out with a drone, your passport is not going to protect you in that situation.
Yeah. They make the further stipulation in this review, Andy, that it has to be a circumstance in which capture is not feasible. And I don't know if that's actually the way the administration has approached these things, because as you know better than I, they've been very loath to capture any of these guys, because then you have to figure out what to do with them in terms of incarcerating them and then interrogating them.
As someone who went to law school some time ago, I can tell you that there's a lot of wiggle room and feasible.
Well, among other words they use in this memo, to be sure. But Andy McCarthy, again, the bottom line is this. We are in a war. You've understood this better than just about anybody. You've written brilliantly about it in all of your books, including Willful Blindness and The Grand Jihad. And most recently, of course, Spring Fever, The Illusion of Islamic Democracy. I appreciate your sharing these insights with us each week, and most especially for your analysis of these deeply defective nominations and the importance of blocking them. I hope the Senate will heed your words. We'll talk with you again next week, my friend. We'll talk with the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.